Hey, 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 conscious leaders, welcome to yet another episode on Carmen Murray's show, where we are really using this time to keep ourselves up to date with the ever-changing world and everything changing around us. As we know, technology is evolving at a rapid pace, and I thought it would be very interesting to bring in an expert that can talk to us about the future of work. Where do they see opportunities? What are some of the fears that the workforce are struggling with? And what are the things that we as individuals can do to prepare ourselves for the future of work? Without further ado, with us in studio, we've got Lindy van den Barcelaar, Managing Director at Manpower Group South Africa. And she shares insights on how we can actually navigate the evolving landscape of work. Warm welcome. How are you?
I'm well, Carmen, and thank you very much for having me.
It's all good. Now, first of all, I think maybe for some context, tell us about your journey at Manpower Group South Africa. And I see that, you know, you've progressed with your career and you know, preparing for your own future of work, if I can put it that way. So maybe talk me a little bit through your career and what you do at Manpower.
Okay, so that's an interesting conversation. Thank you for asking that question. So I am a finance person by background. I studied at BCom Accounting at Wits University, and then I went into the finance arena. And I've been in various finance roles across the course of my career. But in 1996, I entered into the recruitment business, still in a financial role, but in that actual business. And this is where I've been since 1996. I think recruitment is either in your blood or it's not. But where I was originally, I left in 2011, and then I joined Manpower Group South Africa in a finance role, actually. And at the time, not long after I joined, my MD boss resigned, and we, being a global company, we owned by the US, and my bosses sat in Europe at that time, and they came across to South Africa, and they didn't quite know what to do, asked me if I would babysit the business while they decided what to do, so became an acting MD, not something that I'd gone looking for, not something that I thought this was in my horizon, and I actually took up the opportunity, and it's been an amazing journey for me, because doing pure finance for me is quite boring, and that's probably interesting for a finance person to say that, but it is boring for me, and I need constant challenge and change. So moving into the MD role, although I must say I still carry the FD hat as well, I was exposed to the operational side of the business, and it's been an amazing journey for me to be able to combine my financial knowledge with the knowledge of operations, and not only from a career point of view in terms of growth, but in terms of as a person, how I've developed and grown. I mean, 11 years or 13 years ago when I joined Manpower, I would never have sat and done podcasts like this with you, talked about my journey and things like that. Then I was a typical finance person, quite reserved, happy to sit in the background. But with my role came exposure to the media and things like that and different opportunities. So, you know, my advice to people out there is that always be open for those opportunities. Mm-hmm. You may not plan them. They come your way. Grab them with both hands, because it's just the journey that I'm still learning, I'm still growing. It hasn't come to an end, and it's just been an exciting one for me. So a change in career came from a leadership point of view, but it's been the most amazing journey for me, I must say.
Lindy, I absolutely love that. We just celebrated International Women's Day, and you know, one of the things the theme of International Women's Day was investing in yourself. And the conversations that were happening was all about the importance of investing in yourself and also showing up when those opportunities present themselves. So I want to commend you for showing up, because so many times, you know, we see these opportunities and we think it doesn't match us, or we don't have enough experience. And statistically, we know when you look at women versus men, that women, most of the time, when they don't have all the boxes ticked, they usually say, no, I'm not going to participate. So what is the biggest lessons that you learned during that process from saying, okay, I'll do it, hey, actually, I can do this, I'm very good at it? What was that transition like for you?
It was actually incredible. And it's you know what it is, Carmen? It's about not being afraid to ask for help when you need help. Finding that person who can guide you along the journey. And I must just share with you, when I was 42, I decided to do my CEMA qualification, you know, in addition to my financial background. And I was a single mom at the time, and I hadn't studied since I was a young student in my early 20s. And I thought, well, I need to upskill myself. I need to be able to, you know, to be able to be more marketable out there. So I completed that after I had joined Manpower. And because of my role as the MD, I was allowed to apply and I became a fellow with the CEMA qualification. And just last year, out of nowhere, until this day, I need to find out who nominated me for it. I was nominated for a leadership role with SEMA across Africa.
Oh, wow.
And actually won the award. Don't be afraid to put yourself out there. And yes, it's exactly that. You don't have to have all the qualifications and all the experience. You know, in our business, we talk about the learnability quotient. Mm. And that's about assessing your ability, you know, finding out, is someone willing and learning and able to learn in the future, you know, continuously upskill and learn so that they become employable in the future. And that's what it's all about. It's continuous upskilling and learning things that are relevant to your role and finding that person that's going to be your champion to make sure that you stay on the path. Not once have I felt, no, I'm in the wrong role. But you know what keeps me on the straight and narrow, Carmen, is that I have this fear of failure, and it's not a bad thing, because I think it leads you to, you don't become arrogant, you don't become comfortable in your role, you know that you've got to constantly learn and constantly put yourself out there. So in that sort of sense, it almost motivates me to achieve more, because I won't fail, I do not want to fail. And yes, there's been failures along the way in terms of, you know, not major failures, but we have to fail to learn. Mm. No one's perfect. No one has a perfect journey. I certainly haven't had a perfect journey. There's been setbacks, but it's how you deal with those journeys. Learn from them. Pick yourself up, dust yourself off, and move on. So, you know, it's just about, like you said, stepping up and taking that opportunity if it comes your way.
I find it very fascinating. You know, I love being around women, and also, you know, empowering. Empowering is not a word I like to use, because I always feel if I use the word empower, I'm saying I've got the power that I'm going to hand over to you. So I try to be very careful using that word. But it's so refreshing to be around powerful women and having discussions with them and learning how much we have in common, where we all have that imposter syndrome and we all feel that we can't do this thing or that thing. But when we start putting out everything towards that, I mean, I was looking at a Harvard Business Review. They had an article that said, and they actually did research on this to understand the boardroom and how women perform in boardrooms versus men. And they found that women come a lot more prepared to the table. Like when they come, they have a lot of questions to ask. And those questions are usually the elements that help to shape the strategy of the business. And for me, that was quite insightful. I think it's a very good thing to ask questions and ask a lot of them. And
absolutely.
And that's maybe,
you know, in our business, if we bring someone in that's new into our business, I said, if you're not asking questions, then I'm worried, because we don't know everything. You have to ask questions. And I always say to them, I'll ask my staff questions. I said, guys, I don't know everything. I'm learning as each day goes. I'm learning from them. They're learning from me. Mm. But if you're not asking questions, then I'm going to get worried, because you have to, the only way you're going to learn is by asking questions and putting your hand up and saying, oh, I need a bit of assistance, or I need some help, you know, that kind of thing. So, yeah, it's. I think it's changing. I really, really do think it's changing, that, you know, you talk about women coming to board meetings more prepared. I think that's also just who we are.
Yeah,
and it's not to, you know, our male counterparts. They just think, maybe they think that, in my experience, that they know everything, and they don't have to do. I think we doers, we're also doers, because by doing, we learn.
Yeah.
And that's always been my take. You've got to do to learn. You can't just learn from a textbook or anything like that. You've got to do, and that's how you learn.
I have this obsession with wisdom, and wisdom is actually recognizing patterns, and wisdom comes from experience. So that's why you're starting to see like this massive trend where people are going towards the older people to go and learn from them now, because it wasn't appreciated before, because we're going back to roots as a society. But anyway, I don't want to take us away, because I sometimes run away with squirrels, and that means my ADHD is taking me on different paths. So let me get back into why we're having this conversation. So absolutely. I first want to talk to you about, what is it exactly that you do at the Manpower Group? And the reason I'm asking is I just want to put some context as to why we're going to talk about the future of work.
Okay, so you're obviously asking me from a business point of view, what does our business do? So we are, one of the things we do, and we don't like to be referred to as a recruitment company, we rather as a workforce solutions business. So one of the things, the traditional recruitment in terms of finding people permanent jobs at clients, or finding temporary workers and placing them on site at our clients, whether it's blue collar workers or white collar workers. We go across the board. We're not industry specific and we're not skill specific. We're generalists and we do it across the board. So those are the two main things that we do. One of our very profitable businesses has been what's called Right Management, and it's outplacement. So what that means, the program that we offer to the candidates of clients who are retrenching. So your company is busy retrenching, 10 people are being impacted. We go in and offer a service for those 10 people that are being impacted and try and prepare them to go back into the market. So we don't guarantee that we can find them a job, but we're giving them the skills and the confidence, which is so important when people are being retrenched, because, you know, they go through this whole change mood and they've lost their confidence in themselves and no one wants me anymore. It's about putting them in that prepared state again that they can go out and market themselves to become employable. When companies were retrenching, and obviously post 2020 onwards, there was a lot of that happening because companies unfortunately were retrenching. But we felt we were able to make a difference. And you know, our business is always about making a difference in people's lives. We want to do well by doing good. And that area of our business is so, so rewarding because we are impacting people's lives, giving them hope, giving them the tools and the skills to be able to go and put themselves out in the marketplace again. So that was what we did a lot with our Right Management offering in terms of outplacement. A lot of people say, well, why would a company want to invest more money in people that they are losing? Well, it's good for their brand because, you know, Lindy was retrenched from company ABC, but you know what? They were so kind enough to spend more money on me to put me through a program so that I could put myself out there and go and be and able to find another job. So that's why companies will spend. Over the last year or so, that trend has dropped because companies are retrenching less, which is a good thing because, you know, retrenching is not good. So we've shifted more on to the coaching side. Now, you know, if you recall in the past, coaching was always for the elite, for the leadership, you know, or they'd have to go through the coaching. Now, the coaching that we offer is for across the board. Everyone in the organization should have an opportunity to go through coaching. And that's where a big part of our business as well. And also it's adding value to people's lives again. They may be looking to move to a different role within the organization than we put them through a coaching program. It may be the team dynamics may not be great. So we do a coaching program with the team. So that's one of the other things we do. So we always say that once we don't have a one size fits all, we have a one size fits one. So whatever our clients want, if it's above board, and because we're an ethical company and we've just Manpower Group has just received the 15th nomination a year, not a year in a row, but 15 times nominated one of the most ethical companies in the world to work for. And we're the only company in our industry that's actually achieved that acknowledgement. So everything we do must be ethical. It's in our nature. It's part of our culture. It's who we are. We will walk away from any business that's not ethical. So whatever our clients would like us to do that's within the laws, that is ethical, we can assist them. That's why we prefer to be called a workforce solutions company as opposed to a recruitment business.
I love that. You know, a few weeks ago, I interviewed Pietro Dupasani, and it was a fascinating conversation. So she used to work in the mining industry and high up, working her way to the board. And she then there was restructuring that happened, but the business has invested a lot in her leadership and educating herself all the way through. And she planned her her adult gap year, as she puts it, where she knew the restructuring is going to happen, and the next time it happens, she's going to say she's not going to do it. But one of the things that really stood out for me in the conversation is when she started talking about executive coaching and the importance of what that meant for her. She now went to go and study NLP in order for her to make a difference in exactly that, making a difference in the people's lives. It's not just having it, you know, accessible for the high end board members, et cetera, and executives. So I think that there's so much value. And I think if we all could just tap into that and have somebody that can coach us in our careers, I know personally that that has been pivotal for me in my career was having a coach. So well done to you guys for actually.
Well, I've done exactly the same. So even though we offer that as a serving in our business, I've personally, with a colleague of mine, we went and did that executive coaching course. And my, you know, we talk about clients when we're doing the coaching program and that, well, my clients are my staff.
Yeah.
I'm, you know, in my role, other than, you know, leading the steering the ship, wearing the captain's hat, that's, you know, that's the only thing that makes me the MD. Everyone's just as important as I am. And my role, I believe, is to coach my staff, to make sure that they understand what they're doing and why they're doing it. And if they don't understand, for me to guide them more. But it's also coaching, not mentoring, because coaching is also about making people realize that they have to make, it's guiding them to make the decision themselves, as opposed to, okay, Lindy, what should I do here? No, what do you think we should be doing? And is that the right thing or the wrong thing? And let's work towards that. So it's also about getting people to think. Mm. You know, we can't sit there and give them solutions, because sometimes I don't have the answer.
Yeah.
So then we're going to work on it together. But, you know, you come to me. If there's a problem, come to me. Great. There's a problem. Okay, but what's the solution for the problem? So that's why I did that executive coaching course, so that I could become a coach to my staff. And to lead them in the way that's going to make them, I want them to become the best versions of themselves.
Oh, I love that.
And if it's me that's guiding them, then that's my role as a leader, really, really do. So yes, equipping yourself with that kind of skill as a leader is so important and so rewarding to watch people grow. Mm. It really, really is.
So I want to circle back to the thing we spoke about earlier on about we as women, we don't tick all the boxes, and then we don't want to take the call to adventure to a new job opportunity. Women writing their CVs, because I get this question quite a lot, is I don't like this part of my job. I don't like that part of my job. I want to start doing more of this. This is what I enjoy, but I don't feel I have enough experience. If you could just give us a few pointers how you recommend, especially high potential women and candidates, what is the things that they need to put in their CV? Because you don't have to have all of the skills for every single thing. As long as you can do the job and have the tenacity to pull through, what is your advice in terms of writing that resume?
So that's an interesting question. And part of what we do when we're coaching people to go back into the market once they've been retrenched, we talk about in our business the 30-second commercial. And literally it is, it's a write-up on about Lindy. So what is it that I do? What is it that I'm good at? And why would someone employ me? It's just a quick summary, a short paragraph of what are my strengths and what am I hoping to bring to the organization? Because remember, and it's because the market is changing. It's not now just about skills. It's about the technical skills. It's about the soft skills as well in terms of your communication, your ability to collaborate, things like that. So highlight, and once you've done your 30-second commercial, as we call it, so it's selling you why you know that paragraph that's going to have, okay, Lindy looks at my CV, I'm going to choose her. Why am I going to choose her? Because I stand out in terms of what I can do and what I've done. And then showcase what you've done. Highlight those things. This was a situation, and you know, when I was applying for my fellowship for my CIMA qualification, that's what I had to do because I was a director. This is what the issue was. They call a card. It's a case, action, result, or, you know, problem, action, result. This is what the problem was. This is what I did, and this is what the outcome was. So take your strength and highlight that, but also focus on your soft skills because a lot of people don't have those soft skills, and soft skills are so important, and they become with, you know, I mean, like a graduate, it's not going to go into an organization and have all the soft skills, communication, teamwork, collaboration, critical analysis and things like that comes with time. And as women, I think we, especially when you said we pay this huge attention to detail. We do. It's just in our nature. So highlight those strengths, because you can always teach. In our business as well, we talk about if people have got the right attitude and the right soft skills, you can teach this. You can teach the technical stuff. And companies are not just looking for that person. Okay, she's a CA, so that's it. We want her. How does she work as a CA? What culture does she, what environment does she strive to be in? How does she behave in certain environments? Because that's an important question when you're going for a job interviews. What is the culture in the business? What are the company's values? You know, you've got to align your own values with the company the company's values are going to be aligned with yours. If they're not, then just because I'm going to get a big paycheck, it's not a reason for me to go, you know, take a job. So the companies now are looking for more of a rounded person. So yes, I've got the technical skills, but what else do I bring to the organization? And why would I employ you as opposed to, why would I take Lindy over Carmen or vice versa? And it's that opening paragraph in terms of how you sell yourself. Mm. You know, I'm a CA and I've done this and that. Okay, that's very nice. But what stood out? What was your biggest achievement in your career that's going to make me, an employer, choose Carmen over Lindy? That's the thing you've got to do. So we all have things we haven't had experience in, but own it. I haven't done this before, but I'm willing to learn.
Mm.
And I think that's where we hold back. Maybe sometimes as women, we hold back because, okay, I haven't done that. So now I'm not going to say anything because I haven't done, but also not going to apply because I haven't done that before. Well, the person who did that before also didn't do that before. So how are we going to learn if we don't put ourselves out there? It's getting confidence, and as women, it's getting confidence in our ability. We can do this. We've got to learn. And how are we going to learn? By asking questions. If we need to learn, do a course or whatever it is. It's just, you've got to own who you are. And it doesn't mean that you have to have done everything, but just, you know, that you've got the tenacity and the willingness, this learnability quotient that we talk about, the willingness to learn new skills. So that you can make a difference in the lives of people, in the company that's about to employ you or who you'd like to work for. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense. How can organizations ensure they are effectively assessing and nurturing these skills in the workforce?
Well, again, that starts with us as leaders.
Mm.
If we're not displaying those soft skills like collaboration, teamwork, communication. Communication is so important. You know, we can't as leaders just be these dictators and this is the way, a rule of the land, and this is how things are going to work. You're not going to create a team there that's going to pull the business forward. You need to make sure that you lead by example. So show the people below you that you are capable of collaborating with them. And it's important that collaboration and teamwork means the leaders have got to collaborate with the teams. Because we don't know everything. I don't know everything. So by collaborating with the teams and giving them the opportunity to share their views, then they're going to develop those skills and say, okay, well, Lindy's actually really serious about collaboration and teamwork. She doesn't make decisions on her own. She allows us to be part of the decision making. And that creates such a positive vibe and positive culture within an organization. And people are happy now to be part of it. And you've got to give them the freedom and feel that they can, because some people hold back because, no, maybe it's a silly idea, it's a stupid idea. She's going to think, oh my word, I'm not going to mention that because she's probably not going to like it.
Mm.
Who knows? It might be so way out there, but it might just work for the business. And by allowing those, empowering them with that ability to have their say, you're going to create happy people, you're going to create a wonderful environment, and you know what? The natural consequence of all of that is a profitable business. Your profit, yes, we are all measured by our profitability and we're in here to make money, but if you're doing the right things with your teams, it's a natural consequence of what you're doing. The profits will come. And an happy team doesn't generate profits, let's be honest. But it's empowering them and giving them that. So leading by example, showing them what collaboration, showing them what critical skills and things like that. You know, there's processes that now, because of the technology and that are being automated, and that people are threatened because, oh, no, now I can't capture a journal as a finance person or do that now. Okay, but no, we don't want you to do that anymore. We want you to add value to the business. We want you to focus on value-adding activities. Because value-adding activities are going to add profits to the business. So it's changing that mindset, because some people are stuck and they want to keep doing what they're doing for the rest of their life. They don't want to be on that journey of change and adapting technology. But it's how you manage those people to bring them along the journey. It's scary, but make sure they're skilled. They've got the skills to be able to get on that journey, and make them aware that, and knowledge is power. Because people are afraid because they don't know. If you upskill and you're training and you're sharing information with them, knowledge then becomes power, and then they're not so frightened anymore to go on this journey.
And I also think, to your point, I think the environment also needs to lend itself to psychological safety. I think that also needs to be communicated. If the teams and the cultures are feeling threatened, how are we communicating and creating a psychological safety? Because ultimately, I just want to tie that into another point, which is talent scarcity. If we want to retain talent, we also need to make sure that we identify the fears in our workforce, or we identify the challenges and find ways to overcome it human to human. And also, I like that idea of collaboration and co-action, and how can we all act together to make sure that we improve the culture and we do something that can almost catapult the workforce forward and that can keep the talent at bay.
Absolutely. And, you know, we always, in my business as well, I'll talk to the team about constructive collaboration. I don't want a bunch of yes people. You know, this is the plan. We all agreed. We're going to disagree. But let's disagree. And like, again, it's about that psychological safety that you said we need to create. The people feel they're secure enough that they can disagree. I don't want yes people. We must all have different points of views and things like that, because that's collaboration. But we must also feel, and again, people must feel comfortable enough to say, okay, no, I disagree with that. Okay, but so why do you disagree with that? Okay, maybe we need to, maybe Lindy's comment's making sense. Maybe we should relook at it. But you got to create that environment, because collaboration isn't just about we're doing the same thing together, because maybe there's a different way of doing it that's better, and Carmen's got a better idea than Lindy, then people must be able to agree. But also, and as that takes time for people as well, it's to understand that whenever you have a disagreement, it's not personal. It's what are we doing that's good? What are we going to do that's good for the business? So if I disagree with you, and my colleague and I, the two directors, we disagree often because we're very alike, but we're very different. But at the end of the day, it's constructive. We never, it's not personal. We don't get upset with it, because all at the end of the day, we make a decision that's good for the business. And we challenge one another. So, you know, people need to look at maybe rather as challenging. I'm going to challenge Carmen as opposed to criticize. And if you're going to criticize, then make sure it's constructive criticism. Carmen, I don't agree with the way you're doing that, but perhaps we could do it this way. What do you think? You know, there's just so many different ways of dealing with things. But again, creating that environment where people feel free and safe that they can express their opinions.
One of the other things I also think it's so vital is this concept of authentic leadership. And I love what you're saying, respectfully disagreeing, but it's attacking the problem, not the person. And I think authentic leadership is showing my value system is not aligning with this. And I think that a lot of the mess that we're seeing in the world right now has a lot to do because we don't speak our views and we don't speak up when we see something is not sitting well, or we're just going with the flow. And as you say, you don't want yes people. You want to challenge everything that you're doing so that you can do something better and create shared value.
Absolutely. 100%. We have to create those environments, as I said. But you know, also when you think about it, often people think, okay, I'm not going to say anything about it because someone else will. You know, you talk about your values. You know, I'm not, we can see something, because I can see Carmen's not doing something right there. But you know what? I'm not going to say anything because I know so and so is going to say something about it. No, step up and say it. But again, it's that ethical, that ethical culture and this fear of, I mean, I will not, and I tell my staff often, there's no ways that people must not fear retaliation. Because if I hear of people being retaliated against because of what they've spoken up, then I'm going to deal with that person very severely, because people must be able to speak up and say their mind without fear of retaliation. Because, you know, sometimes people say, well, you know, if I say it, then Carmen's not going to talk to me and she's going to know it was me. And no, it should be done confidentially. Mm. People should be able to have a lifeline in terms of being able to report things like that and remain anonymous. But It's a cultural change, because not all people feel comfortable about it. I have no problem myself stepping up and saying, well, I don't agree with that. This is not ethical. I'm not doing this. But that's me. And I think that takes years of experience as well, because I'm an older person as opposed to a younger person, and also a more junior person. I need my job. I can't say anything because I need my job. And if I say something, what if I lose my job? Mm. So it's just, again, creating that environment where, okay, you can say something and there will be no retaliation back at you. We will protect you, because if we don't, then why are we in this business? Why are we doing this? Because then I don't want to be part of a business where that happens, because then it doesn't align with who I am. And it's very important that wherever I am, and it's not only in a working environment, it's personal relationships with friends and family. It's right or it's wrong. There's no black and gray here, white and gray. It's got to be just right, and you've got to align with my values. And I think if you talk about being authentic, you know, being authentic as well, it's also showing your vulnerabilities. Mm. And I can share an example with you. Just recently, I have a payroll manager who I have to medically board because she had a stroke. Sure. And she's a young woman in her early 40s with two young children. And when I announced this to the team, I actually got quite emotional. And then I said to him, guys, you know, actually, I'm not going to apologize, because I need you to see that I'm actually also human. And she'd been with us 16 years. I have a very special relationship with her. So it was very traumatic for me to announce that we're letting her go because of this is what's happened to her. So, you know, being authentic, you know, sometimes if people say, well, you've got to be very careful in terms of vulnerability, because you don't want to be shown to be seen to be too vulnerable. But you also need to be sure that people need to know that you actually are human and you do have feelings. Mm. And they won't, I think, I believe, because, you know, after that, just as an example, after that, I got so many messages from the team to say, we understand your pain and thank you for showing us, you know, not showing us that you cried, but the fact that you were emotional and it actually did impact you in some way. So, but I think as a leader, and maybe as women, we are more authentic than men. I don't know. Just I know from my own experiences that you do need to show vulnerability as well.
Yeah, a conversation that I've been having a lot, you know, with conscious leaders and in the circles with, I'm in, and the forums and the research. One thing that is really showing up is also women are starting to come together and collaborate, but there's also still women showing up as men in the workforce. And I think we as women have something so different to bring to the table, and leaning into our vulnerability is something beautiful. I mean, I'm going through perimenopause at the moment, and every time I have an opportunity, I will speak up if I have brain fog, like I just did with you now. I will speak
it's
up about
part of
it.
Who we are, and it's a fact, and it doesn't make us any less. We don't operate any differently. It's just that sometimes we don't feel so great. And I mean, I'm with you on that journey in terms of, you know, the malaise that you, sometimes you just don't feel right and things like that. But it doesn't stop me from doing what I'm going to do. And I'm not going to apologize for it. Mm. You know, I mean, if you're having hot flushes or you've got this, I mean, that brain fog is like, it's a real thing. But, so, you know, it's part of who we are. It doesn't make me less capable of doing my job. And I think it's also changing. That is changing, you know, because people are becoming more aware. We have to accept it in our workplaces that certain women are going to go through that at certain times of their lives, but it doesn't make them less effective as a leader or a worker. Not at all.
100%. In fact, it makes you more fierce on the other side of it. So that you can stand up for those things that you don't agree with. That's the part that I'm excited about. So.
Exactly.
The thing that I really want to unpack with you is also looking beyond 2024. What emerging trends, you know, are you starting to see in developments that you anticipate that will have a very significant impact on the future of work?
So, you know, I think the technology changes that are coming will continue to change. That's just with us for a very, very long. I mean, it's just the way the world is going. Technology is changing completely. So those trends are going to continue into the future, and the way we as leaders and employers adapt and make sure that our people are ready for. As leaders, we need to be aware of these changes. We need to be embracing these changes and making sure we're keeping our staff up to speed with what's happening, buying into the changes and making sure that they have the skills to be able to, because they talk about, you know, the skills that exist in 2 years' time don't exist today because we don't know what those jobs. So we've got to just be ready for it and make sure that we are resilient enough to be able to take our teams through the journey and get them there. And then the big change, which is happening, and because we're in the recruitment business, as sometimes we call it, is green recruitment because of this sustainability and, you know, having the impact on the environment. So what's happening, especially across our business across the globe as well, is that there is so much green recruitment happening because people are looking to do things that are more, they're safer for our environment, that are, you know, like the solar systems, the wind systems, all that type of thing. So there's a big push towards that now. And again, it doesn't mean because those roles are different, it doesn't mean that people can't do them. We just need to make sure that we are giving the people the education and the opportunity to gain those skills. So yes, you know, people keep talking about, you know, AI is going to get rid of all these jobs and people are going to be jobless. Jobs are changing, but we still need people to do those jobs.
Yeah.
And why can't we use our current workforce to upskill them and take them along the way? And yes, as things change, we may need to bring outside skills. But at the same time, there's no reason why we can't use the skills within our business. So the message is keep resilient, keep doing what we're doing, and keep making sure that you're up to speed with these changes and embracing them as leaders. I, as a finance person, I get bored very quickly. So change is good. It excites me. I embrace it. I want to do things differently and better and make things more efficient than that. So I think if as a leader, if you can embrace the changes that are coming your way and be open, you know, what I'm talking about today may be different in a couple of months' time. Things are changing that much. Just be aware of them, embrace them, and take your team along with you for the journey.
And I totally agree with you in terms of ESG. I think that is where the future is going. It's also governments, the
absolutely.
Environment. And sustainability. But I think what's exciting me as well is this element of greenwashing, and technology also will, I think, be a powerful force that will help us to solve a lot of complex issues, but it also needs a lot of critical thinking skills. We can't have green myopia anymore. We need to start looking at problems and face them head on. I've just had an interview before your interview with Dr. Adriana Marais, who's she was supposed to do the one-way ticket to Mars. And mm-hmm. she does off-planet work and, you know, getting a telescope onto the moon from Africa. Like, there's exciting things happening there. But her point is always about seeing ourselves as one with the universe, but also realizing that all the systems around us, from trees growing and grass and soil, all those things are essential for us to live. And if we don't take care of it, we will make the human Exactly. race extinct. It's not just about, you know, so many people, when you speak to them, someone say, but you know, at least I know I'm not here in 50 years. So I don't need to do anything about it.
So what are we leaving our children?
Yeah, exactly. And it's such a selfish way, I think, for people to look at. I don't have children, but I care about the generations that's going to follow behind me. And I think that we all need to look at how in our careers we find purpose and move towards something that we know is doing something good for the generations to follow. And I think when people feel that those audacious goals are being strived for, I think that that actually puts people in positions where they do want to you know, participate, collaborate, and do amazing things because they know the company has got their back.
And I think we need to realize that it's not a problem of the future. The problem has arrived.
Yeah.
It's here. We have to fix it. And, you know, you talk about sustainability. There's so many, I mean, as our business, we don't manufacture or do anything like that. So how can we assist with the sustainability in that? So one of the biggest decisions that our company took, and it's a global decision, was to cut down on travel. Airplanes flying in the sky with the carbon emissions in that is not a good thing. So we reduced our travel. I know it's not good for some industries because the airlines then have less people traveling, but it's a simple thing like that. When your business is not directly involved with impacting the environment that way, how can we assist, you know, from a business point of view? So we can assist by doing things like that, stopping travel and things like that. And then helping our clients who are in those environments in terms of green energy and things like that. How can we help our clients find the people to work in those environments? And that's where we come in from a recruitment point of view, is how do we, so we're part of that chain and providing the resources to help them along the way in terms of their sustainability goals.
Yeah.
So we all have a role to play, 100%.
And it becomes very challenging when you start talking hybrid, because I saw a report from a cloud computing perspective that the data warehouses and the storage and our time online is more causing more harm to the environment than you know, produce and cows and all of that. And there was a report that was released. So I think there's also an element of balance that needs to happen in terms of how much time we spend online, which is a difficult one because our whole world is moving online. But there's also an impact of our time online and with generative AI now. The more we are creating online using generative AI, the more data storage is required. And that means more data warehouses, which means more forest needs to go. So it becomes a very complex ecosystem. And that is why I think the future is green and the green economy is necessary in order for us to bring about the change that we want to see.
Absolutely. I mean, look what we're experiencing in our own country right now. We're burning up. I mean, it's March, it's supposed to be autumn, and we're just burning up because of things of changing. You know, this is just a fact of what's happening with us.
Yeah.
You know, and you talk about the online thing. I mean, and I think remote working has also added to that as well, because a lot of companies in our business, we're only back at work once a week. We're still doing online working. But something that I've had to try and, you know, educate my staff is that because we're online, they think they need to be available 24/7. And that's not the case. We have to step away from our laptops because work has become home, which is not a good thing. And we're spending too much time on our laptops and we're not getting that work-life balance. You know, and that's something I expect. You know, I say to my team, especially the salespeople who are generating revenue, if you meet your targets in 2 hours, I have no problem that you work 2 hours a day. If you're not meeting your targets, then I'm going to have a problem. And you're not doing anything, then I'm going to have a problem. But it's creating that balance and also trying to lead by example, because I'm probably not very good at that because of Teams and Zoom and all the rest. You can have meetings one after the other. You don't, because you don't have to travel anywhere. But that's also not healthy. So we've got to become selfish with that time when we're doing all this online stuff to make sure that we're getting the breaks that we need so that we don't, you know, in addition to all the time we're spending and the damage we're doing, you know, from a sustainability point of view, it's also the damage to ourselves.
Yeah, 100.
You know, that's the bottom line. You know, we've got to take care of ourselves. And that's another thing I need to do, is take care of my staff and make sure that they're not online 24/7. And if I send them an email, there is no expectation that they need to respond. Tomorrow's another day. Because, you know, the early days of online working, our clients also started to think that we should be available 24/7. So they're suffering from exactly the same problem, you know. Let's create work-life balance and balance in our society so that we don't do as much damage as we currently do.
Another thing that I also just wanted to touch on it early on is this whole thing where technology is seen as it's going to take over our world. And we don't know yet. I mean, it hasn't played out or unfolded where the future is going. You know, there's a good side and there's a bad side to technology. But I think if we look at what we're seeing right now, I think it's all up to us to decide, are we going to use technology almost as a collaborator?
As an enabler. Yeah, absolutely.
Rather than raging against the machine, use it as an enabler. And I think with the interview I had with Bronwyn Williams, who's one of South Africa's top futurists, she said, we need to stop creating this a whole idea of technology being our master. We are making it our master. It all depends on us and how we work with technology, whether it becomes our master or it becomes a companion that we work with.
Absolutely. And sadly, with all the technology, like with AI and things like that, if it gets into the hands of the wrong people, and let's be honest, there are evil people out there. And they're starting to use AI and that, you know, irresponsibly, you know, creating images of people that are not really those people and things like that. So I think as employers as well and companies, we need to just make sure that whatever we're using, we use it responsibly. And it must enable our business, not take over our business, because technology still needs humans.
Yeah.
Technology is developed because of what humans do. So humans still need the human element part of it. That's never going to go away. It's just, how do we bring that in responsibly and make sure the technology we're doing isn't enabling our people, not replacing them, and not doing things that are unethical, I suppose you could call it.
Totally. Lindy, I've had such a blast having a chat with you, and thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and also sharing your story with us. I find it very inspiring, and I think that our conscious leaders would really enjoy your insights from your own personal journey and all the way through to the changes that you are seeing within the corporate environment. I want to ask you, how can people get hold of you if they want to have a conversation or they want to see how they can maybe, you know, reach out and use your services?
Okay, so my mobile is 082-561-7197. And then my email is, my name is lyndy.fundinbarcela, which is VANDENBARCELAAR at manpower.co.za. A very long name. Doesn't fit in any pages. So I'm more than welcome to do. And then they also can connect with me on LinkedIn. Absolutely fine. You know, the more people we connected with, the better impact we can make.
100%. Together, we can do anything. Thank you so much for your time and for agreeing to meet with us to discuss this. And also, I want to put some of your articles down at the bottom for anybody if they want to read about the future of work and technology and what you guys are seeing on your side. Thank you so much.
Great. Thanks for the time, Carmen. It's been great having a conversation with you as well. Thank you.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.